Good morning. It was such a blessing to witness the welcoming of two new members to a community of faith, to the people of God. And I think it goes really well with the message that we have before us today. And before we get to the text that we want to look at, I want to read the two verses preceding them because it highlights and emphasizes that identity that we have as the people of God. And so if you have your Bibles with you, on your phone or with a physical Bible, if you could have it open to 1 Peter 2, we will be looking at verses 11 to 17, but I will be reading right now for you verse 9 and 10. It says, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but you are now the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." And that's what today's baptism symbolizes as well, the welcoming. You are now a people. And this people, there are many descriptions of what this people are described as here. But one of the descriptions are, you are people who have received God's loving mercy. And already we have this gospel background, this gospel narrative identifying who we are. First and foremost, you are redeemed. You are a redeemed people by the blood of Christ. God's mercy. And so, as we continue our series on servanthood, I want to invite you today to look at what it means to serve in our city. And so, reading on from the rest of the text. So we are now at verse 11. I will continue to read. "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority, or to the governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. So, live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor." Honor the emperor. And so as I reminded you of our identity this morning, and as we were reminded through the sacrament of baptism, I'm going to emphasize this a lot, so I hope you can get used to it. I'm going to say identity a lot, people of God a lot. And this identity, the people who have received that mercy, that gospel background, it continues on. Peter says, "Dear friends." Now, I don't know why Peter didn't translate this. The NIV translates this into English as friends, when in the Greek, it's actually the word for beloved. Peter is identifying, again, it's a continuance, calling out to the people of God, the people of God who have received his loving mercy. And so Peter is addressing the people of God again by saying, in verse 11, "Dear friends," doesn't do it quite well. Dear beloved of God, who loves each other. You are foreigners and exiles. And then he goes on to say, abstain from all sinful desires. Foreigners and exiles. He also uses the same term, foreigner, in chapter 1. And I believe this is one of the main motives behind this whole letter that Peter writes, of how we should live out our lives as a people of God in this world, which we are foreigners and exiles of. Why we're called that is what we want to look at today. And so simply stated, Peter is saying that we as Christians, as people of God, again, people who have received God's loving mercy, that gospel background, are in the world, but you are not of the world. We are definitely in it. We are not separate from it. You are in it, but the difference is you are not of it. When I used to teach kids ministry in Korea, this was one of our main themes, identifying us as the people of God, in how we're not just separate. We're not separate from the world. We're in the world, but not of the world. And we would say this every single week. It's like it was a cornerstone for our church. And we would say every week, I would start in the world, and the kids would say, not of the world. And this idea we saw also in Romans 12. And I don't know if you remember, when we first started this series on servanthood, that was the first passage that we looked at in Romans 12. It's a famous verse. I'm just going to quote verse 2. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This is our calling once again. We are transformed into God's narrative, which means that we cannot and we do not identify to this world's narrative. And so, this is my invitation to you all this morning. I want to invite you to reflect on our identity as the foreigners and exiles here on earth and how we can witness Christ for those around us in our community and in our city. So let's ask the question. Now, this is all well and good. Okay, witness to Christ wherever you are. It's a very plain missional message that we have. That's our identity. But the question I want to ask, and the question that always comes up is, how? How do we witness to Christ? Simply put, and I'm quoting Mark from this, for this, Mark as in Mark Glanville, who teaches missional church at our school, and he always says this, every single class, it's like his motto. He says, we witness to Christ, and we must witness to Christ in creative ways through life, word, and deed, personally and as the church, as the people of God. So life, word, and deed. And in our text today, Peter gives us three ways, I think, of witnessing mission for our city. First, a significant and obvious part of this life, word, and deed is to abstain from all sinful desires, which wage war against your soul. And that waging war part I want to get to a little bit later, but I want to focus on the abstaining from sin right now. He also says earlier on in this chapter, so chapter 2 in verse 1, he says, therefore, rid yourselves of all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, slander of every kind. So he's pointing out some of the sins that we might struggle with. And he starts off saying this by saying, therefore, stay away from all these sins. What's that therefore? Therefore. Do you get it? Why is that therefore there? The background to that is also same thing, over and over, repetition of identifying who you are. You are a people of God in the world, but not of the world. Therefore, abstain from all deceit, all malice, hypocrisy, envy, slander, and of every kind. So verse 11 again. Abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. That's the first part. Secondly, how we witness. I lost my place here. Secondly, he also says, so, since you are the people of God and identify in his narrative, live such good lives among the pagans, so the non-believers, the world that does not identify in God's narrative, that though they accuse you of doing wrong, or literally from the Greek it says, though they accuse you as evildoers, they call you evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So they may accuse you of doing wrong, but they will glorify God through witnessing to your good deeds, life, word, and deed. Third, by submitting to every human authority, like the emperor and his governors. It is God's will that by doing good, we should silence the ignorance of foolish people. So whatever the emperors and the governors may be in our lives today, whether I need to pull out that Trudeau word here, or whatever governor or whatever politician that we may think of in our context here, respect them, obey all authority. And by doing good, by identifying as God's people, we should silence the ignorance of some of the politicians we may not agree with, some of the politicians that may not be coherent to the narrative that we identify with. Now, these are some of the basic things that I pulled out from this text, the three ways that we can witness to Christ. But as I read this text for the first time, as I was preparing for this sermon, and as I was really wrestling hard with it, a couple of questions came up that I just couldn't answer at the beginning. And I really struggled hard, and I was wondering why Peter would say such things that we looked at here. So the two questions that I had in my mind as I was reading this text was, first, why in the world, why the heck would non-believers accuse us as evildoers, as doing wrong, when we are striving to live such good lives? It sounds like Peter is contradicting himself. He's not, but it sounds like it. So he's saying, okay, live such good lives because you identify as God's people, because we identify in God's redemptive narrative for all of creation. Do good, but be called evil for it. Why would the world point their fingers and call us evil, doing wrong when we're trying to live such good lives that they may see our deeds, good deeds, and glorify God? Why would they call us evildoers? Also, he says in verse 16, to live as free people, so this identity, and what's included in this identity is also live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but live as God's slaves, which is true freedom. Okay, that's easy enough. But again, the second question that I had trouble with was, why the heck would we now, not the world, why would we, as God's free people, use that freedom we have and cover up evil? Live good lives, be blamed as evildoers, don't use your freedom to cover up for your sin. Why would we cover up our sin? Why would we be accused of doing wrong in the first place when we're trying, when Peter is telling us to live such good lives? I don't get it. What are you trying to say, Peter? It sounds as if Peter is assuming that every person of God, every Christian, will struggle against evil, against the sinful desires which wage war against your soul. He's assuming that everyone will have this struggle. Every person of God will. So again, what is Peter trying to say? Do good? Live good lives? Yes, that's the obvious part. But why would we be blamed for doing this wrong? Why would we be blamed as evildoers when we're trying to live good lives? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm asking the same question over and over again. You can see what was going on in my head throughout the week. Why? Why would the world blame us for being evil? I'm trying to live such a good life for the world, trying to be a blessing for my community, for my city. But why would they call me evil? Well, this is the answer that I came up with. And I think it is because we identify in a different narrative. We identify with God's redemption narrative, and this identity itself is waging war against the sinful nature, the sinful narrative of the world, which is also within ourselves. So why would the world point their finger and say, you evildoers? Or, you guys are just living the wrong life. And that also happens within ourselves. And this, I would say, is spiritual warfare. The world saying, no, we need to live for ourselves. You live for your own happiness. Whereas we say, no, we live for God first and foremost, and we live for others before ourselves. Serve God, serve others. That's our identity. That's our narrative. And so the world is saying, that's wrong. You're doing wrong. That's bad in our own eyes. And that reflects that sinful nature. And that same struggle happens within ourselves. And again, I suggest that this is the spiritual warfare. And when I think of spiritual warfare, a good analogy that I don't know if I grew up with it, but a good analogy that I was reminded of, and it's a very good Canadian analogy in my opinion, is thinking about the life of a salmon. I don't know if you like salmon. I love salmon. Salmon is the best fish out there. I can eat it in any different ways, you know, especially raw. It's just the best. Salmon. I know some people can't handle the raw food in general, but the life of a salmon is so beautiful in that if you know the general cycle, they're born, they go out to the sea, they come back, and their end goal, their ultimate purpose is to go back to the place where they were born and die. And there's a sad beauty in that. But I don't want to talk about that part. I don't want to talk about them coming back, making a full cycle, giving life. So if you're a female, you lay the eggs. If you're a male salmon, then you fertilize the eggs. And then you die there while giving life. I think there's something beautiful in that. I could say much more, but I want to focus on the last little part of how they swim. They swim upstream against the current to reach their goal. Sometimes they even jump over small waterfalls. It's very impressive. There's beauty in God's creation there. And it reflects, I think, the spiritual warfare that we have of always going upstream against the current narrative of the world. And we're always struggling to fight against all of those sinful desires, all of those sinful narratives that keep pulling us, or pushing us, I should say, toward what they think is right. And if I were a salmon, I wouldn't want to give up my whole life so that I could go toward that end goal where you go and ultimately die. The temptation, I think, would always be there, speaking on behalf of a salmon, to always just relax and let the flow take you. And just go with the flow, literally. Go with the flow. The world is saying, live for your own happiness. You don't need to live for God and give up your life and be committed to serving others. Live for your own happiness. The last time I was here preaching, I gave an example from the show Friends and how my wife and I enjoyed watching that. But the narrative of that drama is about your own happiness. But my wife and I usually enjoy Korean, not sitcoms, but Korean reality TV shows. And usually, the Korean reality TV shows, and 99% of their shows, is based on this one word, healing. Whatever show you watch, they'll mention that word at least once in that episode. Oh, I live such a busy life. Oh, it was so busy and I'm so tired. I want some rest. So I went to the mountain. I relaxed and I had some healing time. Or I got together with friends and we went out drinking and we had such a good time and that brought healing for my life. Oh, I went out and donated a whole bunch of things and that made me feel good and it provided me with healing. Now, I have nothing against that, making donations and doing good deeds, but the whole thing is about my own happiness. I give so that I can only I can be happy. I live and I make money and I base my whole entire life and even my marriage and all of the family life that I live so that I can be happy. It's about me, me, me. And for us, it's about God and others and our city. Serving others. And so we're going always against this current. Again, with the temptation, just go with the flow and yeah, just I want to be happy as well. And so I think as we fight this good fight, this spiritual warfare that we have before us, even though they blame us for living in the wrong narrative, they blame us for that fight in itself, that we are living in a different narrative that goes against the current. Even though they blame us, the world, even though they may blame us for it, they will see God and they will glorify God because that's ultimately the only and true narrative. And I suggest further that this effort of living against the world's narrative is the good deeds that Peter urges us to do. Live such good lives. Do good deeds. Always keep up the good fight. Always be struggling against the world's narrative. We are not perfect, and we will never be, but we fight and struggle to abstain from all evil and live as a freed people of God, because by the power of the Holy Spirit, by God's grace, we are a free people. Again, living for God, living for others instead of myself. Serving God, serving others instead of myself. And so as we conclude this morning, I want to turn and reflect on some of the practical implications of this. How can we witness through life, word, and deed in Clayton, Surrey, or wherever you are? How can we make God known to those around us? And I wanted to be a little bit more creative this morning, so that I'm not a creative person whatsoever, but I want to pretend to be creative a little bit. So I took a page from Jesus' letters to the churches to Asia Minor. And we did this in our series in Revelation. I don't know if you remember. And we invited you guys to also write a letter, assuming that, thinking about and reflecting what Jesus might say to Hope Community Church. And this is my version of it. And so I'm thinking Jesus would say this to us. Hear the words from Jesus. To the beloved in Clayton Heights, to Hope Community Church, I commend you for your generosity in helping those in your city, witnessing to me in life, word, and deed. Especially with your resources, it is such a joy to see you living out your faith by providing for the needy and being creative, especially in blessing others, even during this difficult time through the pandemic. I commend you for serving in Tot Romp, Story Time, the Dollar Sale, Garbage Cleanup, all of your various ministries for church, making donations with money, food, clothing. I cannot write enough good things about you. And my wish would be if the letter would end there. Just perfect. God, Jesus commending us for what we're doing for our community here and for ourselves here, blessing others. But I think Jesus wouldn't end there. I think he would continue to say, but be warned to not use your good deeds and identity as free people to cover up for your sins. Make every effort to do good and abstain from all evil because you know who you belong to. You see, these commands that we looked at this morning from 1 Peter are not just a list of religious rules or a list of religious requirements to look the part of being a Christian. Just to mask ourselves so that we can say, oh yeah, that's my identity, I'm a Christian, I'm good. The reality of it is to actually know and struggle through our brokenness to live as God's kingdom on earth. And this is a lifelong process, just like the salmon. Let the world see your struggles. Don't hide it or cover it up, which has been my experience, my personal experience, to try and cover it up under a religious mask that we may wear. We are saved sinners. We are not saved saints yet. We are saved sinners. And what Sid and Dave always likes to say here is that we here at Cope Community describe ourselves as a beautiful mess. A beautiful mess. And then somebody, Sandy, pointed out, look at the artwork that's on the stage here. Now, I'm not an art person at all, and Sandy has challenged me to be more artsy, so that I can be more relative. Because there's such a beautiful truth there. Look at the artwork, and look at those individual pieces of paper that are made to create that work, that beauty. If you take one piece of paper out and hold it, it's just a paper, and it's ripped. It's not pretty. But when you put it together, it creates a beautiful masterpiece. I think that's a beautiful analogy of what a beautiful mess we are, not perfect. And so I encourage you to continue to serve or join in the effort to be a blessing for those around us, in our community, in your various communities and cities, wherever you are. And so I want to end with the exhortation that comes from Peter, and it's the last verse that we looked at. Peter says, show proper respect to everyone, to everyone. Love the family of believers, meaning serving one another in love. Fear God, meaning serving God in love. And honor the emperor. In other words, serve your city in love. Please join me in prayer. Father God, we thank you this morning that we are able to gather again as your people who are called out from darkness by your loving mercy, that we are enabled and we are freed from the power of sin, that we may be able to give you all the glory through our life, word, and deed. And so that's our prayer this morning, Lord. Continue to guide us, continue to empower us to be free from all those sins, to be free from all sin, that we may live out our faith, live your kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. And I pray for all your people, especially the two that we have welcomed in through baptism, that we would be a blessing for others. We would take this identity of ours and live it out faithfully.